Now, with the latest from the world of technology, this is the Tech Guide Podcast with Stephen Fenwick.
I quite like the number of apps that are already available.
Tech Guide.
The iPad 2 still beats just about everything on the market. The new iPad has just kicked away even further.
Tech Guide.
I quite enjoyed using it. Great design. The operating system worked hand in hand with the hardware as well.
Keeping you updated and educated. This is the Tech Guide Podcast.
This is obviously a hot-selling device.
Tech Guide.
You know, we want them to be light, we want them to be portable, and this one's very fast with i7 and i5 processors.
Now, from the studios of techguide.com.au, Stephen Fenwick.
Welcome to another special edition of the Tech Guide Podcast. Thanks for listening and thanks for downloading. I'm glad you can join us. I'm Stephen Fenwick, editor of techguide.com.au, and it's brought to you by the good people at Netgear, Australia's number one brand of home Wi-Fi products. Well, I've just returned from the IFA Consumer Electronics Trade Show in Berlin, and the majority of this week's episode, episode 12, will cover off all the things I saw while I was there. We'll be talking about the new Samsung products unveiled at the show, including the Galaxy Note 2 and the Galaxy Camera, as well as the number of PC products which will support Windows 8. We'll also talk TVs, and in particular the new OLED and 4K models on display at IFA. Our interview this week is with Samsung Australia's head of AV, Phil Newton, who discusses the prospects of OLED and 4K in the Australian market. We'll then get on to the rest of the week's news before we finish off with the Tech Guide Help Desk. Plenty on the agenda this week, so let's dive straight in. Well, the IFA trade show is in Berlin every year, and all the major companies are there, Samsung, Sony, Panasonic, LG, and many, many others. It's the European version of the Consumer Electronics Show, which I attend every year in Las Vegas. That's the January show. So it's quite a time for companies to show a lot of their new products and give updates on products that were seen early in the year at CES and that are now closer to release. We'll be talking about some of those in a moment. But the ahead of the IFA show, Samsung held their Mobile Unpacked show, and this was a press conference to unveil their new Galaxy Note 2. It was at this same event last year before IFA where the original Galaxy Note was revealed. So Samsung took the opportunity to showcase the successor to that original model, the Galaxy Note 2. Now, at first glance, the Galaxy Note 2 does take, it does look a lot like the Galaxy S3. It takes a lot of design cues from that successful smartphone. It has those same rounded edges, cut almost from the same cloth as the Galaxy S3. Of course, it's got a much larger screen. This time out, it's a 5.5-inch screen, up from the 5.3-inch screen seen with the original. But if you head over to Tech Guide and have a look at the story I wrote, there's actually a picture of me holding the original Galaxy Note next to the brand new Galaxy Note 2, and you'll see a slight size difference. Not hugely different. The Galaxy S2 is probably slightly taller, but not so much wider. I think they've done a great job there, having a thinner frame so that the smartphone, the Note 2, doesn't feel too much bigger than the original. It's 9.4 millimeters thick, weighs 180 grams, and I'm pretty sure that it's going to be available as in 3G and 4G models. So keep an eye out for that, Telstra and Optus customers, for the Galaxy Note 2. Now, I had a hands-on play with the Galaxy Note 2, and one thing that really caught my attention was how fast the device is. It's got quad-core processor, quad-core 1.6 gigahertz quad-core processor to be precise, 2 gigabytes of RAM, and it's also rocking the latest Android 4.1 Jelly Bean operating system. But the impressive new feature for me was the updated S Pen. Now, the S Pen is the stylus that comes with the Galaxy Note 2, but this time out, it seems to have a little bit more sensitivity. I was very surprised to hear that the S Pen can detect 1,024 levels of sensitivity, so that gives you quite a bit of accuracy when you're drawing, sketching, writing. The responsiveness to me seemed a little bit faster than the original Note. There was like a split second lag when you're writing on the screen, but this time around, it gave you the actual responsiveness as if you're writing with a pen on paper. It was instant. So that's one improvement. But another favorite improvement of the S Pen is its ability to, this is a new feature called AirView. And what that allows you to do is to, you hover the S Pen, say, above an email, a calendar entry, or a picture or a video, and you see the entire contents of that particular file, that email or whatever. So it opens up, it creates a little preview window where you can read the entire email, for example, without actually having to tap the email and open the application to do so. This is going to save a lot of time for people on the go and just being able to view that content straight away, with, like I said, without having to open up the actual application itself. Galaxy Note 2, we're expecting it to be available sometime in October. And I think this is going to be a popular one. If it's as anywhere near as popular as the Galaxy S3, you're going to see a lot of people move towards this device. It's been described, it's a cross between a phone and a tablet. It has been described as a phablet. So that's sort of the best of both worlds there, the largest tablet screen with the connectivity and convenience of your smartphone. Galaxy Note 2, I've written a full report on Tech Guide. And I've also taken some photos for you to compare. I've also written a little note on the screen and written Tech Guide on the screen just to prove that I was there. So if you want to check that out, head over to techguide.com.au. Now, while on Samsung, the Mobile Unpacked show not only unveiled the Galaxy Note 2, but it unveiled a brand new product, almost a new category of product, the Samsung Galaxy Camera. Now, looking at this device from the front, it looks like every other digital camera that's on the market. It's got a 21x zoom lens. It's got 16 megapixel resolution. It's got a nice grip so that you can hold the camera comfortably. But turn the device the other way, look at it from the rear, and you'll think you're looking at an Android smartphone. It's running Android 4.1 operating system. It's got a 4.8-inch screen, the same screen size as you'd find on the Galaxy S3. So that's an interesting take on the whole camera slash smartphone. I think Samsung described it really well by saying it's got the camera features you can't find on a smartphone and the smartphone features you can't find on a camera. Now, the advantage of having this type of setup is that you've got the connectivity of 3G, 4G, and Wi-Fi, so that any photo you take, any picture can be easily shared on social networks, emailed, they can even be uploaded to a PC, all done wirelessly. Now, it can't make calls, but there are apps like Viber, Skype, and others that will allow communication from this product as well. It can shoot video, so there is a microphone and a speaker, so it's not beyond the realms of possibility that this can also be used to make calls and to communicate. But once we get it in our hands, we did have a little play with it at IFA. It's a lot smaller than you'd expect and a lot thinner than you'd expect too, so it doesn't add, it's not like you're getting a much bigger camera for your money. You're actually getting a similar size camera, but just with all these added features. There's some images I've uploaded to techguide.com.au if you want to check them out.
You're listening to Tech Guide with Stephen Fenwick.
Another highlight of IFA was the just the sheer amount of computers and tablets that are being built for the upcoming Windows 8 operating system. Windows 8 was probably a major theme of the show, and every company, all the major computer companies or tech companies that also create computers, like your Samsungs and Sonys, had a wide range of Windows 8 products. And not just your traditional laptops and desktop computers, there are a number of hybrid PCs there as well. And by hybrid, I mean they can one minute be look like a normal laptop, and the next you can detach the screen and you can use that then and carry that around as a Windows 8 tablet. Samsung actually introduced at the show the new ATIV line of their products, the smart PC products. They've got smartphones, smart TVs, and now they've introduced a line of ATIV smart PCs. Now, ATIV is to Windows 8 what Galaxy is to Android. So the ATIV line of products are going to be Windows 8 smartphones, Windows 8 tablets, and Windows 8 PCs. So the smart PC that we saw at the show was a convertible to PC, a hybrid type PC, where you can use it as a tablet, you can then insert the screen back into the keyboard dock, and then use it as a laptop. So however you want to interact with Windows 8. I think Windows 8 is a sort of operating system that, having it in tablet form alone, probably doesn't utilize all its features. Having a keyboard and that extra processing power really can utilize the full capacity of Windows 8, hence the reason why we're seeing a lot of these products. It's also very much touch screen friendly. So the reason why you're seeing the tablets as well as all in one PCs, where desktop PCs with touchscreen interfaces, which are designed for Windows 8 to work really well with. Samsung also announced a desktop all in one smart PC as well. Sony introduced the Duo 11, which was Windows 8 PC / laptop. Now, it's a kind of a convertible device where the screen can slide back and reveal a keyboard. I've got an image of it on Tech Guide for those who want to have a look at it. It's an 11-inch screen, so that you if you want to push the screen back, a keyboard then emerges underneath, so you can use it as in laptop mode. But if you just want to sit there casually and use it in tablet mode, just use the touchscreen mode, you then push the screen down and then just slides then across the screen, across the keyboard, and hides it away. It's got about the same thickness as a laptop computer, so not quite the detached two-piece setup as your normal hybrids, the Samsung smart PC model, where you detach the screen and you've got to leave the keyboard, you've got to hold the keyboard elsewhere. The Sony Duo 11 is an all-in-one unit that can act as a laptop and as a tablet without having actually to detach the two devices and bring them back together again. But Windows 8, huge focus at IFA this year, and we'll be seeing a lot more of those products once Windows 8 is officially released later this year. But if you want to check out the pictures of the Samsung Smart PC and also the Sony Duo 11, head over to techguide.com.au. Tech Guide is brought to you by Netgear. If you want to experience the world's fastest Wi-Fi in your home, well, now you can with Netgear, Australia's number one brand of home Wi-Fi gear. Supercharge your home wireless network with the Netgear R6300 Wi-Fi router, and you can experience gigabit speeds up to 3 times faster than your current Wi-Fi, which means faster data transfers, smoother HD video streaming, and a more reliable network connection for online gaming. You'll also get the best Wi-Fi coverage, which means you can now use your tablets and smartphones to get online in every corner of your home. The Netgear Genie app makes installation easy and lets you view and play all of your digital photos, movies, and music on your smartphone, tablet, PC, or smart TV. And if you want to find out more, head over to netgear.com.au/fastest Wi-Fi. Well, still continuing with our coverage of IFA, and a big focus at IFA 2 was TVs. Now, all the majors were there, Samsung, LG, Sony, and Panasonic. Now, the focus of this year's IFA was actually two different formats of television. There was OLED, which is short for Organic Light Emitting Diode, and 4K. 4K being the ultra resolution televisions that have a screen resolution of almost 4,000 pixels across, hence the name 4K. But let's start with OLED. The most impressive thing with OLED is the fact that the material itself, the organic light-emitting diode, creates its own light. And therefore, there's no need to create an artificial backlight. Now, by not having an artificial backlight, it really saves on space and thickness. Now, the LG model that we saw at IFA is just 4 millimeters thick. That's less than half the thickness of an iPhone. The Samsung model was slightly thicker, but there is a reason behind that. The LG screen, while being only 4 millimeters thick, is only a screen. The actual TV tuner and inputs of the LG OLED were actually contained in the stand. I've put an image up on Tech Guide in my blog that I posted just on Tuesday morning of the LG TV and the Samsung TV, for that matter, the OLED. You can see clearly the LG TV with the inputs that go into the stand. Samsung's TV, while slightly thicker, is not that, it is not compared to LED and other types of TV, is still remarkably thin. But the Samsung OLED is an all-in-one TV, just where the inputs are in the back. There's no need, as LG have done, to place the TV tuner and the inputs in the stand to save space. But one thing with OLED is the screen, the picture quality has to be seen to be believed. The blacks are totally black. The colors are so bright and warm. And the motion judder, the screen resolution, the screen refresh rate, I should say, is remarkable too. So much so, Samsung have enabled their OLED TV to have a function called multi-view. And just as its name suggests, it allows two people to watch two different programs on the same screen at the same time. So if you and your wife maybe want to watch, I want to watch the football, my wife wants to watch another program, we can both put on a pair of multi-view glasses, which have built-in earphones, and watch our own programs separately and hear them separately. I tried this on the stand, on the Samsung stand at IFA, and it was incredible. Now, it works like 3D works. Now, rather than creating with 3D, it creates an image for your left eye, an image for your right eye. Now, with multi-view, one person wearing one set of glasses can watch what we'll call the left eye view, which is one program, and the other person wearing the other glasses wearing like the right eye view. So it's putting out two programs at the same time, two images at the same time, and refreshing so that each set of glasses picks up its own picture. And even each set of glasses has a button to switch between programs, and it works instantly. I was very impressed with this on the stand. I've written about it on Tech Guide. But OLED is going to hit the market, the Australian market, later this year. And from what I was spoke about, and you'll hear a little bit more about this in our interview next with Phil Newton from Samsung, you're not going to get much change from $10,000. That's expected from this brand new technology, and prices will hopefully come down in the near future too. But moving on to 4K, that's the other type of TV we saw at IFA. And these are very large screen products, 84-inch. The two main ones that I saw at IFA was from LG and from Sony. LG's 4K and Sony's 4K both have upscaling technology too. 4K, as its name suggests, 4,000 pixels across the screen. That's four times the resolution of a normal high-definition television. Full high definition television. So, but at the moment, there's not a lot of 4K content, if any. So these TVs have to upscale existing content like your Blu-ray. So, until there is 4K content, and that will hopefully come, you can use the upscaling technology to get, to see these TVs in all their glory. Now, The movie studios that produce that send the digital files that are shown in digital cinemas that are used to project it on digital projectors, The files that are sent to these cinemas are actually 4K files. So these would, in fact, be compatible to view in all their glory on these new 4K televisions. So hopefully we've heard of Blu-ray, DVD, now Blu-ray, and hopefully soon the movie studios, and if there's obviously enough uptake of 4K TVs in the market, will probably release within the next couple of years 4K format as well. So you're going to have to replace your libraries again. I know I will be. If I've got a 4K TV or a 4K projector, Sony earlier this year produced a 4K projector, which was truly magnificent. I saw this in the Sony offices and included the and had a good look at the upscaling technology there as well. Truly remarkable technology. So once we do get around to 4K, hopefully there's plenty of content to watch. But in the meantime, they're not cheap either. The LG TV is rumored to be costing, when it is released later this year, about $15,000. The Sony's TV, on the other hand, I've heard is going to be priced between $25,000 and $30,000. Not cheap. Not cheap to own this new technology. It is new. But you put cast your mind back to, say, when plasma first came on the market back in 2000, you were paying $30,000 for a 42-inch standard definition plasma TV without a TV tuner. So if prices can come down from $30,000 back then, hopefully prices will come down in the near future for 4K TVs and OLED TVs while we're at it in the near future as well. But time will tell. If quality is anything to go by, they're all excellent. But pricing, which will be official later this year, is something that's going to really determine the success or failure of these new TV formats.
Tech Guide. Now, a Tech Guide interview.
Well, this week's interview with Tech Guide is with someone very familiar with the Australian TV market, and that's Samsung Australia's head of AV, Phil Newton, who took time away from the huge Samsung standard IFA to have a chat with us.
Well, Phil, thanks for joining us. Now, we're here at IFA, and OLED seems to be the highlight of the Samsung stand. When can we expect to see that in Australia? And, more importantly, how much is it going to cost?
Righto. G'day, Steve. How are you, mate? Yeah, look, we plan to have OLED in the country before Christmas. In terms of cost, it's around the 10,000 mark, maybe a dollar less, or thereabouts. That's the plan.
And in terms of the picture quality, like it's a stunning, the quality you get out of it. Obviously, the organic light-emitting diode allows for not only the contrast and the picture quality, but it also allows for multi-view, which I had a try on the stand earlier. Now, that's going to solve all the arguments about who's going to want to watch what on the TV, and that only works with OLED. Is that right?
That's right, mate. Look, whether it solves the arguments or not is a different question, but it absolutely, in terms of what you can watch on TV at the same time, nothing comes close to it. You'll be able to view in full HD with active shutter technology, two different video sources is astonishing. And if you've seen it yourself, it is seamless. It is brilliant. In terms of the actual unit, the TV itself, you're talking about every single pixel element having its own light source. So you don't need backlight. So in terms of energy consumption, it's a significant reduction in energy consumption. It's a more affordable technology for the consumer to use in terms of its ongoing value or cost. And the picture quality, the contrast and the colour is beyond comparison. Nothing comes close to it. You've seen it yourself. The image quality is surreal.
Now, your OLED TV, and there's a few here at the show. There's obviously LG and your own. But your OLED TV, I notice, everything is in the screen. There's no smoke and mirrors with fitting all the ports and inputs in the stand. You're not spruiking how thin it is. You're obviously going for quality, but it's all in the one unit, isn't it?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Obviously, it's important to be thin. Most of our products are these days, but thinness isn't everything. What we strive for is picture quality. So the ultimate in picture quality we could produce was using a technology called blue LED, or blue OLED. So with blue OLED, you get real colour. So you get perfect black. We call it absolute black. You get perfect whites, and you get perfect colour gamut on the screen. So with the other technologies that you've seen, they use colour filters to try and improve the image quality. So they make it super thin, but they're also having to put in these other filters and things, which means they lose space to put in the connectors. So in our product, it's all built into one. It's still super thin, but the picture quality is beyond comparison.
Now, as you indicated earlier, it's going to be roughly a $10,000 TV. Where is this going to sit in the Australian market, do you think? We already love our TVs. You produce the leading LED TVs. Where is this going to sit in the Aussie market?
Right at the very top. So it'll be a choice for consumers who have the money whether to buy a 75-inch at $9,500 or whether they go for the OLED, S-O-L-E-D, I should say, at $9,999. But it is really that early adoption space or the rock star look and feel. If that's what you want, then your choice of two products.
And over time, I imagine OLED is going to get cheaper. There may be more size options as well. So it's like everything new. It's expensive to begin with. But do you see this becoming sort of the leading technology in TVs in the years to come?
Yeah, obviously any new technology is difficult in terms of mass production. We've solved all of those issues over the last 12 months to be able to bring the product to market before Christmas. However, moving forward, in terms of scale, really any size you like is possible. In terms of technology, yes, it'll clearly be cost less and less as the yields improve in production. So, yes, I do see it as a future technology. In fact, I see it as a replacement for LED in the longer term. But how long that time is really beyond what I know.
The other thing we're seeing here at IFA is 4K. So the 4K ultra-high definition, I think other companies are calling it. Where will that... That's something that obviously Samsung's involved in as well. So is that something you see coming into the market sooner or later?
Yeah, look, 4K is nothing new to the market or the industry, I should say. We've had 4K for some years now. And the cinema company or the film studios do release their films in 4K for the cinemas. However, there is no available content for the consumer today in 4K. So the issue for us is best picture quality with best flexibility. And for our money, that's SOLED. You can get as good an image quality on that product as you can, if not better, than upscaling on a 4K screen, which is what the only way you can do it at the moment. The other issue for 4K is not just the content, but the delivery of it. So yes, upscaling is one issue, but doing that is synthetic. And when you do anything synthetic, obviously you're not going to get as good an image quality. So what we are trying to do is produce a 4K product sometime towards the middle of next year, which will have a seamless input with decent content. There's no point releasing it to the market until you have that. So it's probably at least 6 months to 12 months away before we release a product to the market itself.
Now, Phil, I've got $10,000 to spend on the TV. Do I go the 75-inch super smart TV that you recently released, or do I hang out for the OLED? What do I do?
Mate, it really depends on how big your room is, I think. So if you've got a big enough room, I would go the 75 for sure. It's still LED. It's still much less power consumption than any other traditional technology. They're both rock stars. So they'd look great in your house. No matter, I think what you should do is probably buy both, mate. Have the 75-inch for the lounge room and the 55-inch SOLED in the bedroom.
Sure thing, Phil. I'm counting on a review unit, a long-term review unit for you, but thanks for joining us today.
You're very welcome, Steve.
Now, a Tech Guide news update.
Well, now we're going to get round to wrapping up the news very quickly. We're all running out of time here very quickly. First of all, let's kick it off with an announcement that's just come through about the Samsung Galaxy S3 now available as a 4G version for Telstra and Optus customers. News just came out today on Tuesday. I just stepped off the plane from Berlin literally a few hours ago, and this is one of the first emails that I received once I did step off the plane today. Was the news that Samsung were going to make available a 4G version of this hugely popular Galaxy S3 smartphone for Telstra and Optus customers at the end of the month. Now, from outwardly, it looks exactly the same as the original Galaxy S3, which was released a few months ago. The only difference is there are a couple of new colours. There's going to be available in titanium grey and onyx black, so that you can easily distinguish the 4G models by these new colours. It's also going to have the latest 4.1 operating system on board. So if you're in the market for a Galaxy S3 and you're a Telstra or Optus customer, this is your chance to hop in on the powerful 4G networks of the respective operators. Optus today announced the launch of their 4G network in Sydney, Perth and Newcastle from September the 15th. Telstra, of course, and already announced plans to extend its 4G network, which will cover up to 2/3 of the Australian population. So 4G growing quite rapidly there. But it's interesting with the news of an iPhone launch in the weeks ahead, the availability of a 4G Samsung Galaxy S3 is really going to keep up the pressure on the new iPhone. Hopefully the new iPhone will also offer 4G connectivity. If it doesn't, I think the Galaxy S3 is going to have a bit of a jump on them there. So I've written a report on techguide.com.au if you want to check that out any further.
This is Tech Guide with Stephen Fenech.
Now, Kogan, the online retailer, is known for coming up with some pretty interesting products. The latest is no exception. It's a HDMI dongle. Now, what this does, it gives any TV with a HDMI input, it gives that TV the ability to become a smart TV because the dongle itself has also got Wi-Fi connectivity built in. The dongle itself has got an Android operating system, so it turns your TV into an Android device, and with Wi-Fi, it lets you connect to your network and then access the web, access things like apps. But what it also does, it also allows you to access a movie subscription service through QuickFlix. QuickFlix has formed a partnership with Kogan to allow customers who buy the HDMI dongle from Kogan to become members of the QuickFlix movie streaming service. Now, there's thousands of movies and TV shows in the QuickFlix library. So for $99, which was the price of the Kogan Agora HDMI Wi-Fi dongle, you'll become a QuickFlix member and you'll receive an all-you-can-view subscription so you can stream the latest movies and TV shows from QuickFlix's very large library. It's available the second half of September. Pre-sales are starting next week, so check it out. Kogan HDMI dongle turns any TV into a smart TV. Well, Bose are well known for making high-quality audio products. Their latest is the Bose Solo TV system. Now, what this is, it's a speaker system that's about the same size and shape as the desktop stand that a flat-screen TV rests upon. So what it can do, you can sit the actual TV on top of the Bose speakers to enhance the TV speaker sound. Now, a lot of people say that, you know, there's their flat screen TV, the picture's great, but the sound isn't crash hot. Depending on the flat screen TV you buy, of course, but in many cases, there's a lot of people who want to enhance the sound quality from their televisions without having to go to the trouble of installing and buying and installing a full blown home theater system with multiple speakers. Now, the Bose system, priced at $549, includes their proprietary digital signal processing and speaker array technology. Bose are very well known for producing excellent sound and large-scale sound from such a small device. We've reviewed plenty of their Bose products in the past, including their noise-canceling headphones. And the impressive thing about Bose is they use technology to enhance audio and make it sound really detailed and yet pretty wide as well. That's the new Bose Solo TV system. It's available now from Bose stores and authorized Bose dealers, and well worth checking out if you want to enhance the sound from your television without having to go to the trouble of installing a full-blown home theater system.
Now, answering all your tech questions, the Tech Guide Help Desk.
This week's Help Desk question is a question I get asked fairly often. What's the difference between a laptop and an Ultrabook? And which one should I buy? Well, first off, a laptop is your traditional notebook computer, which comes with an optical drive. Screen sizes are various size screens, but the key of the laptop is the fact that it's got the full connectivity as well as having a CD/DVD or maybe even a Blu-ray optical drive. So it can read discs, write discs, play content on discs. So it's a movie player, as well as having all the other features that you'd find with a laptop computer. So connectivity, wireless connectivity, the ability to run applications, programs, and generally do your day-to-day computing needs. Now, an Ultrabook, on the other hand, is a thinner, lighter device without the optical drive. That's probably the key difference between the laptop and an Ultrabook. Is the Ultrabook is, I think, the first one that sort of really kicked off the whole craze was the MacBook Air back in 2008. Now, it did without a DVD drive. You can buy a separate DVD drive for the MacBook Air, and now the MacBook Pro with Retina display, the 15-inch laptop, has gone the same way. No DVD drive, but you can buy a separate external DVD drive if you like. So But you know, the thing you need to really, before deciding to buy a laptop or an Ultrabook to decide the best one to suit your needs. You really need to ask yourself, do I need to access content or save content to a disk? If you're needing, you want to use your laptop as an entertainment device, perhaps you want to, you got a large DVD collection, Blu-ray collection, you want to watch these on the go, you need to burn CDs, share content that way, then probably a laptop is going to suit you. Whereas if you can get away with not doing that, the Ultrabooks are not only fast and light, they've got processors that enable longer battery life, and the speed with them that they offer, like speeds 30-second startups, really almost instant wake from sleep when it's in sleep mode. But the thing with the Ultrabook is, as its name suggests, it's really sleek, it's really light, and the fact that it doesn't have a DVD, CD optical drive really takes a lot of weight and thickness out of the product as well. Now, accessing content, we know that we can access content using USB, using the cloud, wirelessly. There's many ways to access content without actually having to access it from a disk. So if you find yourself mainly using USB drives to share or information or upload information, then you'll get away with using an Ultrabook. So many cloud services available now too. So if you can, you've got a lot of material you can access, content you can access remotely from the cloud, then there's really no use to have a DVD, CD, optical drive. So an Ultrabook may suit your needs. I hope that's cleared things up for our readers that asked about the difference between a laptop and an Ultrabook. You've got to ask yourself those questions before deciding which one's right for you. Well, that's a wrap for yet another week. It was great to have your company. Thanks again to our friends at Netgear for sponsoring the Tech Guide podcast. Feel free to get in touch with us too here at Tech Guide at info@techguide.com.au or head to our Tech Guide forum if you'd like your question answered on the Tech Guide help desk or even answered on the website. We've got a very loyal reader community who really love getting in and helping our other readers have their questions answered. So thank you for your company this week. We'll talk to you again next week.